Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Hi, welcome to this week's edition of Blues Talk. Again, John, Dave, and myself. We're going to look back over Leinster's victory in the quarterfinals of the European Cup, all due to European Cup action. Look at some of the new signings and re-signings from Leinster, and also have a quick look at the ladies' games, which are being played last weekend and this weekend as well. So, lads, into our another semi-final in the European Cup. A really impressive performance. Obviously, we came back from 14-0 down after 10 minutes and Sexton going off. Showed a lot of determination and guts and all the different adjectives that you can describe this team as, but they certainly showed it in abundance.
Well, Alan Kavanagh sent us a tweet after the match. I said, so after 20 disjointed minutes, we won with a performance of huge energy and lots of skill. Does this mean that Jason and Dave were both right and that this is the first? And I think that pretty much sums it up. First 10 minutes were, disjointed, but by God, the rest of it was very jointed.
Yeah, I was really worried after the first 10 minutes because The tackling was shocking. I don't know how usually when they go out like that, it's very hard to turn it around, but they certainly managed. Like, there were 3 and 4 tackles being broken by, especially your man, O'Flaherty. He was a thorn in our side. Didn't he get 2 tries early?
Yeah.
Early? He got the first 2 tries, if I'm not mistaken. Just to come back from that and to change your mindset, change your head in game like that, and then Sexton goes off, like you say, and, Ross Byrne was okay, mate. You could argue he was getting a bit of an armchair ride, but geez, he made his tackles. He guided them around the park. If I was Jerry Thornley, I'd call it Rodge-esque. But he was just what we needed when we needed it. And it's great to see that after, because both Ireland and Leinster, everybody's opinion seems to be, Sexton goes off, you're not winning, But there you go, we are, and we did.
Ross does tend to deliver in the big occasions in Europe. I mean, he's done it in the past.
He's behind a brilliant pack.
Oh, yeah, it makes it easier. Yeah, yeah.
And we saw, I don't want to rain on his parade, but we did see him behind the beaten pack in England in 2 matches against England and Twickenham, and there's serious faults that on those 2 particular days. It kind of though, that's the end of my criticism of him, but I would just say it did kind of remind me a little bit, and I might be over egging it, that it was kind of his Croke Park moment. Whereas it was, if you remember, Johnny Sexton wasn't always the finished article. Back in the, 2008, 2009. And I think he might have been actually dropped and he was playing for Mary's earlier on in that Heineken Cup season. And, obviously he came on for Contepomi, kicked a penalty fairly early on. And that seemed to settle him. And then he played Grace in the final. It just reminded me a little bit of that performance. And I'm not saying he's going to go on and become Sexton, but just the similarities were there.
Yeah, everybody needs, their first top 10 hit. And he had his there against Exeter. I mean, the point you make, Jason, is a very good one about him being kind of in an armchair ride behind a totally dominant pack. Because, after Exeter scored that second try, they didn't see the ball again until the 45th minute. I mean, we just kept the ball off them and smothered them completely. They could do nothing because they didn't have the ball. And, it was an extraordinary thing for us. And instead of doing, we didn't go out after being 14-0 down. We didn't go out to try and score those 14 points straight away. We went out and built ourselves back into the game, put on pressure, knowing that pressure would lead to Exeter conceding penalties. which they did, which we kicked. And then obviously we took the tries as well. But we didn't try straight away to get those 14 points immediately. We didn't need to score that one brilliant try that would score us 14 points kind of thing. We built ourselves back into the game by the point that, I mean, at halftime, as the teams were running off the pitch, if somebody had told you that Exeter were 14 points up at the start of that half, you wouldn't have believed them.
No.
Indeed. Yeah. Go on, John. I was just going to add to what previously said. It's probably time to move on. Second half was just more of the same. We didn't take our foot off their throats. It was just, Ruddock had a smashing game. Henshaw obviously had a smashing game. It was Josh van der Fleer. Jesus Christ, he had a belter of a game as well. He's always had it. He's always been. They said there was talk that his carrying wasn't quite up to scratch, and that was his work on from Andy Farrell, but he's always carried pretty well. He's tackled like a maniac, and whether he's in attack or defence, he's always super committed. He's always had that in his game. Maybe he's added the extra little bit to his carrying. Maybe it's footwork. Maybe it's, I don't know what he's added exactly, but he's.
I think he accelerates when he goes into contact now, and maybe, I mean, by looking at him, you'd say he doesn't look a very big person, and maybe a little bit underpowered, and maybe that's why they were concerned with his ball carrying. But he seems to actually accelerate into contact, which, you know, by that momentum knocks back the larger man who's trying to back him.
I think he uses a combination of both. As you say, Jason, he accelerates, and as you say, John, he uses footwork by picking, you know, a line that will give him an advantage over a defender by not, you know, he doesn't accelerate straight into them. He's looking for soft shoulders.
And he doesn't have the physique to do that.
No, he can't. He's not going to be Sean O'Brien. He's not going to be Reece Ruddock. So what he's trying to do is he's changed his ball carrying. Not changed it, but he's enhanced his ball carrying to take advantage of what he does have, which is quick feet and pace.
Yeah, Caelan Dorris is another one who does that kind of stuff. Like, he's not a very
has amazing footwork.
He's not a very big man either. I mean, I've stood beside him. He's not small. Like, no, Josh van der Fleer is not small. You know, he's big. He's big for a human being. He's just small compared to your Sean O'Briens, etc. And you know, the pair of them, they're not super super huge. They just have all that. And Conan too has very good footwork in contact. Reece Ruddock maybe not so much. It's not his big party trick. Not that he's rubbish with the feet or anything, but he's more of a cart horse than a fleet foot merchant. But it's just amazing to see. There's obviously a lot of work done on footwork in Leinster, especially back rowers. I mean, you expect backs to have twinkle toes, but all the back rowers in Leinster seem to be able to do this Gordon Darcy-esque, making meters in contact thing. Conan can do it. Van der Fleer can do it.
I think there's a realization. Certainly, if it didn't exist beforehand, it was certainly brought starkly to bear after the Saracens match that we're not going to win a power game. You know, okay, we've powerful guys, but we're not going to win a power game. So what we have to do is we have to win the brain game. And that's what we did against Exeter. I mean, we had them on toast. I mean, their lineout collapsed. Their breakdown was in serious trouble. They didn't really trouble our breakdown at all. Their maul was very good, but they only got one chance to use it because they didn't have the ball. The ball was kept off them and up the far end of the pitch. And it was smart rugby we played. It wasn't stupid rugby. Kicking the ball to Hogg, particularly this season when he's in really good form, is a shortcut to disaster. And we moved him around the pitch nicely so that even when the ball did end up in his hands, it ended up in his hands on our terms.
Yeah. I think as well, like, that I actually think that going back to Northampton for a number of games when we played them in that final and then subsequent games, we kind of destroyed that team. And maybe Munster put the final nail in that Northampton team when they got that drop goal after 60 possessions.
Yeah, it was the end of
Ulster. I think Leinster destroyed that team as well. And I think we just seem to have psychological advantage over Exeter. They came out of, they were 14-0 up. And all of a sudden, in a blink of an eye, we got the try, we got a penalty, and we got another try, and we converted that other try. And all of a sudden, even when they came back, so we went in at half time, like 14 or 20 points to 14 up. When, you know, like for all intents and purposes, they said, what the hell happened after 10 minutes? We were winning 14. Their talisman Sexton has gone off after 27 minutes. I'm sure they were just shell shocked. Then they came back out and they went all guns blazing again. They got their try fairly quickly. But your man missed the conversion, critically missed the conversion, whereas we had got our conversion from the sideline, you know, shortly before that. They're still down. They've come back and they've scored their try. They're still down. They're 20. They're 19-20 now. And then they got a quick penalty. But once again, within a couple of minutes, we got a penalty. And they continue to concede dumb penalties in very dangerous parts of the field for them. And they essentially couldn't get out from their 10-meter line. Once we got the ball down there, it was like a swarm of bees on their ruck, and they just conceded. They couldn't get out, and we got two or three penalties in quick succession, which just took that separation between the score lines. And you know, like if Roy O'Loughlin's try had have been allowed, you know, that would have been 40 points to 22 the final score.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Exeter have to have a question to ask themselves now. They're in the position that we were in 2010, that Munster were in 2007. We went out against Toulouse in the semi-final the following year, if you recall. Now, we had injuries and stuff like that, but, you know, it was a disappointing way to go out. Munster went out in 2007 against Scarlets in the quarterfinal, if memory serves, and they went out quite disappointingly as well. But in both cases, the teams came back. Munster came back, obviously, in 2008, 2009, they got to the semi-final again. They've been regular. They've been regular knockout inhabitants ever since. Obviously, we know about what Leinster have done. Exeter are at that point. The question is, do they become Ulster or do they become Leinster and Munster? That'll be interesting to watch.
We're in April. We're only in April now. They've lost six games. Yeah. You know, I mentioned last week that Baxter had serious concerns about whether this team had the mental fortitude to back up a great season last year again. And that's what makes... That's the difference. There's plenty of teams that won championships and won cups for one season, and then they just can't do it and build on their success year after year.
Well, that'll be the interesting. It'll be interesting to see how Exeter go next year, to see that they get back to, you know, straight away get back on the horse, get back into the quarterfinals, semifinals. You know, the ability. I mean, obviously the team didn't become crap overnight, but you know, I mean, Leinster obviously have a screw in their head because. Obviously, to play the first game against Leinster, very unfortunate to lose. Second game was at home to Leinster, lost in a bit of a shootout. Third game was that great game in Sandy Park that we often talk about. Fourth game, they were very unfortunate to lose. You know, but you know, after a while, that becomes a thing. You know, after a while, a screw gets turned in a team's head, and it's very hard to turn it back. I mean. In 2000, I mean, I don't know if you read Bernard Jackman's autobiography when it came out that time, about how they sensed that they had turned a screw in Munster's head after 2009. In 2010, they came and gave them a walloping in the RDS that time. And that turned it even further because Munster had kind of convinced themselves, the only reason why Leinster won was because they had Rocky Elsom. And then the next season, there was no Rocky Elsom. They got an absolute even worse beating. And that kind of turned the screw. And Munster have never been able to unturn that screw. And it might be to say there's other clubs. There's clubs that, you know, have an advantage over you. I mean, we found it very hard to beat Saracens for a very long time. Or not Saracens, Ospreys. Found it very hard to beat Ospreys for a very long time. We find it very hard to beat Saracens now. Ospreys in particular. And sometimes a team is another team's bogey team. It's the one team you don't want to see coming over the horizon.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, I suppose that's from a psychological point of view. Mm. But then from the factual... You know, physicality on the pitch. I mean, like, you know, we mentioned it the quality off the bench for us. Like, and there was, you know, three guys in my mind that stood out was Baird and Porter when they came. Obviously, Byrne came on like a lot earlier than probably he was expecting to come on. You know, had an exceptionally good game. But then you had Baird and Porter who made significant contributions. And I was looking at their replacements, like, they're just not of the same quality. You know, I mentioned them, and it's unfair just to single out one guy, but like Whitten is just not at that level, you know, and like that's the quality that was coming off their bench. He came on after 60 minutes. He's not going to be someone who's going to be a complete game changer.
He's not a game changer.
He's not Christian Cullen, you know what I mean? Like, he's not going to do amazing things. And like, even instantaneously, we saw the difference that Baird has when he came on. Like, he stole that line out within a minute of him coming on, where eventually Larmour scored his second try. You know, because we were able to snaffle their line out ball. And like, their line out is a point of weakness. They had 14 line outs and they lost four of them. 4 out of 14 is a very high percentage. We had 8, I think, and we won all 8 of our lineouts. And there was probably 2 lineouts included in that 14 that should have been penalised for crooked in, but the referee seemed to... I mean, how a touch judge standing behind the hooker when he's thrown the ball in
can't see
that the ball goes, you know, varies off the centre to the centre tunnel.
This is what I was told when I was reffing. If it's a windy day, like a blustery day, in fairness it was in Sandy Park, we were always told if it crosses the 5 meter line straight, then it's fine.
Okay,
that's what we were told. That's how you judge.
Fair enough, you know, because it's gonna blow around the place. But you can also see by the time it hits the 5 meter line whether it's going in the wrong direction or whether it's changing direction.
Yeah.
You can't put a spin on a ball that makes it change direction in midair. At least I've never seen
that. The first hooker who does that would be the first million-pound player in rugby.
Exactly.
But it must have been pretty crooked if, you know, one-eyed BT Sports picked it up.
Absolutely, Jay. Nailed it.
There were other guys that came on as well. Actually, I thought had great games. One guy who came on that you don't expect to see at the coalface in the business end of a European season was Ross Maloney.
Yeah,
I thought he played really, really well. He really, really anchored that scrum.
He's a cracking player. Like, again,
yeah, but he doesn't get a whole lot of opportunities for various reasons. Mainly, well, the various reasons are James Ryan Baird, Scott Farty, Dev Toner.
If you're playing in a team with Paul McCartney, John Lennon, and George Harrison, you know, you're not going to get your songs published.
Are you calling him Ringo? Seriously?
I'm not calling him Ringo.
Ringo is your point. That's your proof that it's Ringo.
I wasn't actually comparing him to Ringo. I was going to name a few other luminaries, but I ran out after the Beatles, okay? But no, if you're playing with a lot of, you know, seriously classy players, it's hard to get a look in. But the guy, like, he's very high mileage on him at this stage. And he's only, 27, 26, 20, he's around that anyway. And he's, like, for a second row, that's just coming out of first class. Like, you know, you're just getting it to into your stride, you know. Like, we've seen second rows, Dunica O'Callaghan and, you know, Simon, what's his name, for Wasps. Go on until they're 40.
He's 26. I just looked it up.
20. There you go. 26 years of age, and he's already got 115 Leinster caps or whatever. He's a great player. He's a great guy in the trenches. He can run a line out. He can, you know, he's got so many attributes. He probably doesn't have, like, I think he's just a smidge under 6'6". So you put him in an international second row, and there seems to be a cap there, you know. They're all looking at 6, 7, and 8 now. So Alan Wynne Jones, he's about Alan Wynne Jones height, but Alan Wynne Jones is a special case. A and B, he's, you know, he's not far from retiring. But you know, a guy like that could go on to play another 10 years for Leicester and amass a shitload of caps. And, you know, okay, he might not get a look in with Ryan's surname and Ryan's Christian name, but he'll certainly be in Heineken Cup squads. No bother.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very good player, and it was great to see him get kind of a some high end pitch time, which he doesn't normally get. But it was just an all round. It was just a superb performance. We kind of hammered the hammer, as John is wont to say sometimes.
It's not an original thought, though.
No, it's not. But we took them on where they were strong, where they thought they were strongest, and showed them that they weren't, and that destroys the team. That absolutely destroys the team. I mean, they feigned themselves on. I mean, they pride themselves rather on their precision, and we made them look messy. I mean, a lot of the stuff they did was really messy. Where the penalty they conceded for running into one another when they were in our 5 meter, that's not something that Exeter do.
No, that's because of pressure.
That's pressure. Absolutely.
And it was pressure everywhere. It was pressure on the pitch. It was pressure on the scoreboard. Like Baxter again alluded to it in his book. He said we had loads of time. I don't understand why they, but like during commentary, it said Exeter had only taken two kicks at goal all season, so they went back to where they were used to and what they normally do when they're, you know, 10 meters out from the opposition line. They tap and go, and generally speaking, they score from there. Whereas the smart thing would have been it was only 9 points in it at that stage with about, I don't know, 10 minutes to go. Like, take 3 points. It's only a try in it then. Plenty of time. And they went for broke. It was almost like they tried to be Billy Big Balls and, you know, mano a mano, and they failed. And the psychological damage that did to them, or like any team, it doesn't matter what. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be Exeter playing in the European Cup quarterfinal. You could be playing in your local rugby club. But the psychological boost that the defending team has for holding out the attacking team like that is, you can't quantify how important it is during a game.
No, man. I mean, I agree with everything except for the thing. I don't think they were trying to be Billy Big Balls. I think they were just going back to what they know.
Okay, what you know, but which is to take on the
where they are by playing that way. Which is, I mean, the way they play is very similar. I know that it's very similar to the way we play. You know, they don't make mistakes. They're very precise. And then when they get into the 22, they score tries. And they're not too fussy about how they do it. But they came up against, it was like Ramstein coming up against Liebach. We were the daddies and we were showing them how it was done.
Yeah, it was. And like, you know, what do you think of the I mentioned the referee missing the crooked lineouts. What about the swinging arms that he missed?
I am 100% certain, having watched all the games over the weekend in both competitions, that the referees have been told to dial down the cards. Because there's no, I mean, every single one of them, there was, in almost every single match, there was a decision that would have led to a, you know, possibly a red, probably a yellow, that led to nothing.
Yeah.
I think the referees have been told to dial down the cards, that there were, that the authorities reckon that there were too many cards. Now, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs, and the eggs they decided to break is over the high tackle. But I think that they think that there's too many eggshells lying around the place.
There was a lot of the
BT guys complaining about, that'll be a card in the Premiership, and you know, one of them was against us, and one of them was for us. So I thought it was good that we didn't win through somebody being carded, or, you know, we're away to Exeter, which is pretty hard. Like, you're away to the defending champions. I don't care what you say or who, you know, they're not that good, or, you know, they're the defending champions of Europe and you're away in their backyard. And okay, there's no crowd, but that's still an impressive thing to go and do it. And people are all saying there's going to be an asterisk over this season, whoever wins it, because of all the COVID and people losing games because they didn't even play in and whatever. And while that's true, if we do go further in the competition, we've gone away to Exeter and won. We're going away to La Rochelle. If we can manage to win that, you know, we're in the final and all bets are off, whether it's at home or away. I'd nearly rather it be away if we make it, just so as we can say, look, we did it the hard way. We went away to Exeter. We went away to La Rochelle, you know.
I heard the final could be in the UK because there's a possibility there's going to be crowds and the organisers want some sort of atmosphere.
Sure. I wouldn't have a problem with that.
It wouldn't surprise me if that was the case. Obviously closer to the day, we'll look at it in more depth, but, you know, obviously there's a huge Irish interest because of Rog and because of John O'Gibbs been involved in La Rochelle, and some of the rugby they played has been brilliant. But let's remember, the rugby they played that's been brilliant was against Gloucester and Sale, who lost 3 out of the 4 European matches they played this season.
Mm-hmm. And it was only 18-16 at half time.
I wouldn't. KBA is great, but we'll have to have a much more in-depth look at La Rochelle. I mean, they're going well in the top 14, but you know, they're a French team. So, but I mean, I don't know how easy it is to judge how good or bad they are based on what people are judging how good or bad they are, because the teams that they played are shit.
Yeah, but like Sale decided to shoot themselves in the foot for whatever reason. You know, it was like as though someone from the New York crime syndicate gave them a quick phone call at halftime and said the fix is in, lads. Because you know, I mean, it was 18-16, and then your man decides to be, he tries, I don't know what he was trying to do, to fly hack the ball through and misses it, and then the La Rochelle winger chips through, or fullback chips through and scores under the sticks. Like, I mean, that's a sickener. You know, and then Sale decided not to score any points until the 76th minute. So, like, they just decided to pack up the tent and went home.
Yeah, I was heartbroken for former Saracens knob Alex Sanderson.
Yeah, he is. Pat, his brother, used to play for Leicester, isn't that right?
Yeah.
They're a bit...
I presume he got the personality.
They're a bit BT, all right. I'm just surprised that we're writing off La Rochelle so early.
No, we're not.
We have to have a deeper look at them, because the talk that's going around at the moment is based on nothing. And most of the people who are talking about it will only have seen those two games because the top 14 isn't on TV here. So it's easy to be kind of fooled by, you know, a performance against Gloucester and a performance against Sale. There's going to have to be a much deeper look taken at them before we can say, oh, it's going to be a tight game, or it's going to be what kind of game it's going to be, or what kind of game we're going to have to play against them even, because we don't even know how they play in the top, or people don't really know how they play in the top 14. Probably know they could be one of those French teams that where the ball never sees daylight in the top 14.
Yeah. Who knows? That's for another week.
Yeah. Obviously we mentioned the La Rochelle quarterfinal. That was our Saturday viewing. Sunday viewing was a massive disappointment. I think they played 160 minutes of rugby and we didn't see one try. I think we saw 20 odd penalties, no tries, and just disappointing fare from all four sides.
Really looking forward to Toulouse and Clermont. I thought it was going to be a great game. I didn't get to see the first one. At the Bordeaux game, I turned it on just as they were taking the last penalty to win it from their own half. But the other one, I was kind of primed for, and it was so disappointing. Like,
yeah,
two sides that can... I know the weather didn't help. It was piss and rain, but at the same time...
It's not like it never rains in France.
No, and you just expect to lose both sides, really, to be able to throw the ball around in the rain as well. And I think there was one line break in the game. I didn't see the stats, but like, as far as I was concerned watching it, there was one time when Toulouse kind of pressed up into the 22 and got around them on the left-hand side of the field. The rest of the game was just...
Well, as Jason says, it was 160 minutes of rugby and the only highlight was a long-ish kick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Austin Healey's commentary was quite funny too, I thought.
Yeah, he probably went for beers with Alex Sanderson afterwards.
Well, I think he might have gone for psychological help. I think he needed a hug anyway. He was very disappointed.
In fairness, it was one of the more honest commentaries I've ever heard.
Yeah. So anyway, it's opened the door now for us to play La Rochelle, and Toulouse are taking on, who are they playing? Bordeaux. So that's not till the start of May. So I think we got a Sunday fixture, didn't we?
Yeah. I think that's good, actually, because we don't have to worry about people traveling. So that's usually the reason we hate a Sunday fixture.
Yeah.
And Sunday away in France. French love their Sunday rugby. It's a funny thing on Sundays. Like, I remember going to a petrol station in the middle of nowhere in France. I think it was somewhere between Toulouse and what do you call that place? Anyway, doesn't matter. It was in the middle of France, and I pulled into a petrol station, and there's hundreds, you know, many hundreds of people having a day out in a feckin' petrol station, like families. I was like, what is going on here? It was like a motorway service station type thing with restaurants and McDonald's and all that stuff in it. And there were families just sitting around outside and having the... It was just... Is this what you do on a Sunday in France? You all go to a petrol station? I thought it was bizarre. But
Probably say the same about the dropping well for you frequent, John.
That was actually an art happening.
Okay.
So that's what that was.
Went over my head, unfortunately. But I think it's a good thing for us, though, because... whatever game we have the week before,
we've got extra days rest, and then
and it doesn't matter what we have the week after, because it's actually Ulster and it's at home. So, but it doesn't really matter, because it's the bloody Rainbow Cup. If we show up, we do the fixture. It's, you know,
yeah, but they'll still play, and his coaches will be still, you know, involved in it, and therefore they'll need that time to have the extra day's preparation. You got to travel to France, all that kind of thing. Like, it's just, it gives us that extra bit of time. Instead of it being it could easily have been on a Friday night for TV, and that would have made that turnaround shorter, even though there might be no one playing in that match that plays against Munster. I don't know what they're going to do, but, you know.
You had a theory there, Dave, about that they couldn't, in subsequent games, they can't play any of the same players or something. What was
it? No. My it was based around if they weren't allowed
quarantine
government. Yeah, if the government hadn't given an exception to Elite Sports, we wouldn't have been able to use anyone who'd been in France, including the coaching staff. So it would have been tricky. But that's gone now because of
I haven't heard it been confirmed. I haven't heard it.
But I haven't heard it being confirmed yet.
But like the ladies are playing on Saturday.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem like there was talk of that match possibly being moved to Belfast.
Yeah.
To kind of circumvent it. But that doesn't seem to have happened. So
no.
I'm presuming that it has snuck in under the radar.
It's a matter of winding its way through the halls of administration before it's really. But I mean, whilst it's been kind of announced it's happening, there's no official announcement it's happening, and there's no legislation or whatever is needed, standing orders, whatever.
Yeah, well, they do make it up as they go along as well.
Well, that's very. I think we're in the 25th iteration of the vaccination plan, so you know, it's a movable feast.
It's not like they've had a year to plan it or anything.
true.
But anyway.
Just quickly looking at some of the challenge, because obviously lockdown is on, I think I watched nearly all the rugby that was on the weekend. One of the game, I suppose, of most significance for us was Ulster's game against Saints. I mean, like, they nearly threw that game away. They had three yellow cards in their favour. They were given a penalty try. And they still managed to go in at halftime 22-14 down. Like, I just thought they were, I don't know whether they just didn't seem very efficient in converting any of the possession that they had.
That Ulster team's a really weird team. sometimes it goes out and it looks really good, and it can, you know, it can juggle fire and dance with knives and walk the tightrope, and it's great. And then the next time it comes out and it's fucking rubbish. And it looks like they've never seen a rugby ball in their entire lives.
They've been like that for years, so they
have been, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I mean, the personnel changes, the coaching staff changes, but the mindset is still there. It's weird. Not the mindset, but the outcomes are still the same.
It is weird, and you'd have thought Dan McFarland had a handle on it, but you know, there was a point in Les Kiss's reign when we thought he had a handle on it. Mm. And then it ended in ignominy.
I never thought he had a handle on it.
Well, okay.
Yeah. But like, I mean, they've got some, like, even getting Marty Moore back. So I'm not going to say Fitz probably been a bit over generous, but they've got him back playing, you know, pretty well. He scored a try. It looked like he needed a bit of a breather. I remember there used to be a guy called John Riggins. He played, I think he was a running back for the Washington Redskins when Channel 4 started showing the American football on TV in the early 80s. And he used to sit down. He'd do a run or whatever, score a touchdown. You'd see a big, he'd have a bottle of oxygen, and he'd have a mask on, taking it in, in between the plays. It looked like Marty needed it. I mean, he looked absolutely buggered after it.
Wait to see Simon Zebo when he comes back from France and the dirt trolley.
Well, there you go. I mean, like, I think that's a good bit of business for Munster, actually. Like, I know. Yeah, he's box office lads. And Munster need bums on seats, and they need to reinvigorate themselves. And like, no better Buchel than him.
No, absolutely.
Speaking with my marketing hat on, it's a great bit of business. I mean, he is going to galvanize the support. Like, it doesn't matter. Even if they were able to sign Bowden Barrett or Brody Retallick or someone, they wouldn't galvanize the Munster support the way that Simon Zebo would be able to. You know, he is going to put bums on seats. At a time when Munster are kind of going through an identity crisis, he's going to help them with that identity crisis. Question is what he does on the pitch. I mean, he has all the talent in the world.
He's box office, Dave. Box office.
When Simon Zebo plays well, he's very, very hard to stop. When he's fit and focused, he's very, very hard to stop. I mean, he's one of the best players in the world when he's fit and focused.
Yeah. You know, we can kind of slag him off and maybe criticize his fitness regime and so on. He still has scored 60. He's got a savage strike rate. Scored 60 tries for Munster. And I thought...
I had a look at that today. I think about 48 of them were against Zebre.
Okay, fair enough. But like, he still scored he scored in the European Cup final for Racing there against Exeter as well. So, you know, he does have a good strike rate.
One of you two made the point. There's a big difference between being outside, you know, Finn Russell, Vakatawa, with Teddy Thomas and Curtly Beale, and being outside, you know, Joey Carberry, Damien Diende, and then Chris Farrell falling over.
Yeah, he could be starved of possession with the team's
interest. You might find that he's going to... It's going to be interesting to see how they work with him as well, because they have about 40 million fullbacks.
Yeah. They do. They have a lot of cover in those back three positions. And, like, there was a guy that... he's played very little. I know he got injured. It was Gallagher.
Yeah.
I have to say, I saw him play. I think he's definitely scored, if not two, tries against... I think it was Dragons. Admittedly, Dragons away, but he still put himself there when he got injured. And like, he seems to have got very little game time for whatever reason. Like, he just seems to be overlooked. And, you know, I don't think players are going to stick around. They're going to say, nah, I'm not getting a look in here. I'm going to move on.
And they've also got Dave's mate. Who's Mike Halley, is he, Dave?
Yeah. He is now Ireland's Mike Halley. He used to be England's Mike Halley, but now he's Ireland's Mike Halley.
Good.
Yeah.
You've changed.
The peace process is Mike Halley. Actually, like, speaking of the club that put the con in Cork, did you see who won the Pro 14 Coach of the Year?
Oh, Mick Bradley, yeah.
Son-in-law.
Well done.
He actually did I think he did a decent job with Zebre this year, in fairness to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Not an easy, and he's been in the Kieran Crowley's, you know, has had the Treviso were very good for a couple of seasons, and Crowley was getting the plaudits, and you know, now they're shite, and Mick Bradley is getting the plaudits, rightly, deservedly. Like, when you've got a club like Zebre who very rarely win, to do anything good with them is an achievement. It's like playing behind a beaten pack. You know, if you can do shit behind a beaten pack, you're super. Cue John Cooney, Dave's other mate. But, you know, yeah, hats off to him anyway. He put in his apprenticeship with Connacht and in Scotland.
For a long time, the closest we came to beating the All Blacks was under him.
Mm. It's true.
So there is something there, you know, in terms of coaching ability.
There's a great documentary on YouTube. It's about 40 minutes long. I think Rugby Pass produced it. And it's behind the scenes now. It's about two or three seasons old on Zebre. It's quite an interesting watch. But I think it's probably his second season there. And yeah, it's kind of just their pre-season, but it's interesting just to watch it anyway. So we got a few. Leinster seems to have changed their modus operandum and how they announced their signings this season. They're doing it in dribs and drabs. So we've got
all about news. The likes on social media.
It's all about the algorithm, Jason.
That's it. Yeah.
Keep them watching.
Unfortunately, the one that I'm waiting on I haven't heard any. Well, two of them actually, Furlong and Toner.
Mm.
They're keeping them for Friday.
Maybe that must be it.
It's a big Sunday.
It's Furlong Friday. You're at Leinster Rugby.
You want to hit you always want to hit the eyeballs on a Friday. It's the time you want
to
do it.
I thought you were going to say smash the like button. I was watching the match the Leinster match against Exeter the other day, and I was just thinking as we kicked off, the two guys starting in our second row are potentially not going to be there next season. Now, there seems to be a bit of positive rumours going around. A Toner is to re-sign for a year, but hasn't been confirmed yet. And obviously, we heard today that Scott Fardy is going to retire. Like, I think you have some stats there, John, on him, do you?
I better look them up. They were sent to me earlier by Mr. Michael Thompson, Esquire.
So I'd watched them in Death Hall before I read them.
played 79 games, won 71 games. That's like, that's an All Black stat if I ever heard one. Lost 6 games, drew 2 games. Win percentage, just under 90%. And notably, he was only involved in 1 Heineken Cup loss, which must have been the Saracens, you would have thought. So, how about that for Mr. Fardy's few seasons?
He's been, since 2010, we've actually done very well in signing second rows, one exception.
Buster Douglas.
Buster Douglas, who I saw playing at the week.
I was surprised, played for Bordeaux.
Yeah, he's still as memorable as ever. But,
just before you start off there, his wife must have discovered that Bordeaux is a bit more palatable to her tastes than Dublin.
Yeah.
Because they were citing her wanting to go home. I think they had a baby or something, and they wanted to go home for emotional support.
What was I saying? Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, we had Nathan Hines, we had Brad Thorne, we had Hayden Triggs, who was a great signing, and we had Scott Fardy. I don't think there's any fluke that we've got all this plethora of second rows knocking around the place, like, you know, like Ryan Baird, like James Ryan, like Jack Dawn, like Charlie Dawn, like Ross Maloney.
Are you saying we should sign A.B. Matheson?
Why?
Make us a lot of drum house.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. I mean, we saw it in Munster as well, like when Langford was down there. He had a huge effect. Andy Ward up in Belfast had a big effect as well, or with Ballinlinch, but with Ulster. So you know, you get the right overseas player in, and they do leave a legacy. And Scott Fardy has added to the legacy that the guys before him have left. He was a brilliant signing for us, really was. I mean,
good footballer, worked hard, dirty fucker. I mean, it was great.
It's all three. Yeah. Nailed a lot.
Yeah,
no, he's just what you need. He hasn't got the comedy effect of Nathan, you know, holding down.
Nobody was outrageous as Nathan Hines. He was more subtle, kind of mellow dirt.
Yeah.
But like, he was fantastic for bringing through so many. And you mentioned second rows. I'm sure he also brought through some of the young crop of back rowers too. I mean, he played
learned an awful lot of.
I'm sure someone like Scott Penny could only but learn from, mm-hmm. or even, you know, Jack Conan, I'm sure, has learned from him, or, you know, Caelan Dyer's Irish internationals, from someone who's played. How could you not? From someone who's played in a World Cup final.
They'd learn professionalism, because, I mean, the guy's 30, what is he, 36, 37?
I think he's 37,
and he's walking out on his own terms in good condition. So you could learn from that anyway.
Yeah, for sure. One other interesting signing was Sean Cronin. I'm delighted that I thought he was going to jack it in, but thankfully he's not. But it strikes me as an unusual signing, considered that Tracy we know, Kelleher we know. You know, do you think Sheehan is going to be under pressure to exit stage left and move somewhere else?
I don't think so. I don't know for sure. Obviously,
no, I don't think so. I think that the forward planning is that we'll be losing two hookers to the international team. The analysis maybe that Leinster have done is kind of they're looking next year and they're going, well, we're going to be without Kelleher. We'll probably be without Sheehan as well. So we're going to need two hookers.
Yeah. I've been thinking, all right.
That's my hopeful reading of it. but yeah, you can't, I don't know. I can't see. It's hard to see.
Look, if every guy who was supposed to be going to Munster was going to Munster, there'd be fucking, I don't know, there'd be nobody left in the UCD.
Well, think of it this way, right? You're a young Leinster player, like the like of a Dan Sheehan or a Scott Penny or whoever. You're probably, you know, living in your mammy's house and, you know, have a nice life, have all your mates here, you're in college, you've got all of that going on. Why would you want to up sticks and go to a club that's not winning all the stuff that Leinster is winning, possibly with worse coaching, and live in a city that's not the one that all your friends and your mammy and everybody live in? And they're pretty young guys. You know, they're in their very early 20s. Well, you know what? You'd want to be a serious carrot. And don't forget, the branches are not allowed to outbid each other. I'm sure they can probably throw in stuff like, oh, yeah, you can have a house. You can, you know, you can live in this house with three other lads, or you can have a car, or, you know. But they're not allowed to pay any more wages to the guys. So, like, why would you? Would you like to go and live in Limerick where none of your mates live, and or Belfast or Galway? I wouldn't. I don't see it. I don't see why. I can see like Jack McGrath, maybe, who's a bit older and wants to reignite his career. Sadly, it hasn't worked out for him so far. But I can see somebody like that who wants to get out from under whatever, or get a change of scene, you know, just to try and reignite their career. But these guys don't need a change of scene.
But if I was Jermaine Maloney, for example, who's 26, so if I was him and I'd be looking around and I'd say, well, look, all of a sudden Ryan Baird has just kind of come in the last 18 months. He's now pretty much in the Irish 23. So for big European games, I'm not playing. Okay, Scott Fardy's going. And Devin Toner's got another year. And obviously Ryan is there. I'm sure he's thinking, so if everyone is fit for the European Cup final, I'm not in the 23. And it depends on your, like, all those factors that you've mentioned there are all very valid reasons to stick around.
Let's start with 26. It might go the other way if you're 26.
Yeah, but if somebody, regardless of who they are, turned around to you and said, you know, we like what you've done in Leinster. You anchor that sort of dirt trackers team when the internationals are away. like that you can run a line out, that you're a leader, blah, blah, blah. And we want to build our pack around someone like you and one or two or three other, and they list off and a few big names. You know, your head could be turned, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, if that's
for Ross Maloney, his head's not going to be turned by an Irish accent.
Maybe not. But like, if just for argument's sake, say Exeter.
Oh, no, I understand the point you're making. I could see his head been, and I could see that been said to him. But it's not going to happen. I mean, he's not going to do all that, like you say, in Galway, Belfast, or Munster for the same money. When somebody from Bath or Harlequins or somebody in France could be saying to him, and also offering him big bags of cash.
Yeah, but look, I can totally see a 26, 27-year-old wanting to go to France, see the world, do what, you know. Done all his college.
Just to clarify, I'm making the point about Ross Maloney because I don't think he's going to be an Irish international, right? There are guys who would still hold hope of the Irish jersey. They might be attracted to the other provinces. But if a guy is at the point where he's looking at his career and he's thinking, am I going to be an Irish international, or even am I going to be a regular Irish international? I'm not really. So what am I hanging on for? You know, if I go to, it's not like I'm going to be playing for Ireland anyway. So why not go to Sale or to Newcastle or to Quinns or to, you know, Biarritz or somewhere where at least I'll get a bit of cash as well.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. And
get up my family. You know,
you've also, at 26, 27, you've also had a good shot. It's not like you just, you know, you just fell out of the womb and you're still trying to go.
I'd hate to see Ross Maloney leave.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, I'd hate to see him leave too. But
I think he's the kind of, to a certain extent, he's the reincarnation of Leo within the dressing room. He's a real leader. Does all the dirty work. Does it well. Good player. Underrated as a footballer.
Absolutely.
I think you have to. I mean, you have to have that guy on your roster, whether it's Ross Maloney or Billy Holland in Munster. Or Alan O'Connor up in Belfast, you need those guys. Those are the guys that you build a club around, because the other guys aren't going to be there.
Yeah.
So like, it's important that Leinster are keeping those guys happy. Yeah. You know that they have those backup guys that are going to play. Like, we probably play, off the top of my head, I'd imagine we play 40 to 50% of our games with our second team.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it's so your second team needs to be pretty strong if you're going to do what we do, you know, win fairly convincingly and top our conference each season to guarantee a home semi-final, to keep our, you know, ranking or whatever up for Europe, all these different things. You know, so it's, you can't just like, what happens, what seems to happen in Munster is they've seen to have a very strong 15, possibly 21 players, and they just, a couple of injuries, and they just don't have the depth chart to go down. And as a result, that's why they finish in the semi-final or second place in their conference some years, end up playing us in the semi-final.
Well, there's a case in point. Like, Ross, would you mind Ross Maloney being subbed up for a European final?
It wouldn't frighten me.
Exactly.
So, I prefer it didn't happen, but it wouldn't frighten me.
It leads us on neatly to, I think it was you.
Sorry, John, that's actually the point I was going to make when I was, I apologize, Jason, interrupted you. Was that, I mean, those guys, the guys that you're talking about, the guys who play so many of our games, have on occasion had to play European matches like Michael Bent did last year. And we know that we can rely on those guys. We know we can rely on Ross Maloney. We know we can rely on Michael Bent. We know we can rely on, you know, we had it on Saturday. Rory O'Loughlin had to go and play a European quarterfinal against the champions. But you know, you can rely on them because they're part of that cadre of players who are, you know, the core, the real core of the club.
Yeah. I was going to say, it leads us neatly onto you sent a text around a few months ago, Jason, mentioning loads of rumors that were supposed to be happening. And one of those rumors was that Conan, Deegan, or Penny was going to leave to go to either Munster or Ulster. So we've seen that Conan and Penny are not leaving. So that leads us on to Max Deegan, who is at, I'd say he must be 24, 25. He's coming to that stage now where he'll be finished college. He'll be, you know, looking for a bit of adventure. And maybe his head could be turned now. I know he's out injured the whole season. But like, you've got Caelan Doris there. You've got Jack Conan there. Like, Deegan is a super player. Like, he'd walk into a lot of teams. And fully fit, which hopefully he will be, you know, at the start of next season. He's a handful. He's a really good player and he's very athletic. So we'd love to keep him, but can we give him game time? And what do you think? Is he gonna sign again on the dotted line? Fingers crossed he does, but
I hope we keep him, because I think he's a magnificent footballer. He's a guy who'd be the opposite of what we were talking about, Ross Maloney. Because he's a guy who would think, yeah, no, I am with a shout for more Irish caps. I can be.
He has an Irish cap anyway.
He's a guy who could think, I could be part of regular Irish squads. I could go to World Cups and stuff like that. So he'd be a guy who could be tempted to Munster or Connacht or Ulster, because he'll be eager to stay in the system and not eager to go and play somewhere that'll disqualify him for playing, unofficially, of course, for playing for Ireland.
Mm. Yeah, well, hopefully that comes out in the wash very soon and he re-signs.
Maybe he'll be part of Furlong Friday.
Maybe.
If this comes out and if it's announced tomorrow that Furlong is leaving the club, we are fucked. Furlong Friday will take a whole new meaning on, because we'll be the Furlong down the road by...
I haven't looked... you know, his dad's name is Miles Furlong. That's just so class. Like, it's a, you know, it's a brilliant. Now, I'm sure, and I've met the man. He's a big man, like his son. And I'm sure if anybody ever slagged him about it, he would have been put in their arse. But it's a cracker name. Fair play to him. Mm. On the last 3 days in a row, we've had a young fella announced graduating from the academy to their first Leinster contract, senior contract. We've also, you know, then we've had another few signings listed after that. So I haven't looked, but who's left in the academy that could possibly be upgraded? We've had Milne. Have we had Hawkshaw?
Yeah, Hawkshaw's come through. Tom Clarkson
has been announced. So that's the three. So who's left in there that can be promoted? Because they're probably going to... Oh, Aaron O'Sullivan, will he get a first Leinster? Because I think he's year three. Will he get a first senior contract? Because it seems to be what they're doing. Every day, every morning, we'll announce an academy graduate and then we'll follow them with three or four others.
Osborne, he's probably a bit young, is he?
Only in first year, barely in first year, I think.
Well, he's only in front, because when you said Osborne, I got confused because he's off to Munster. Jamie's still only in first year. It should be pointed out, by the way, that Craig Furlong's father's name is not Miles. No, it's not.
It is.
It's not. It's James.
It's Miles, okay.
I was seething inside at that joke, John. Jamie Furlong. I mean, the other guys who came through, were any of them actually bumped early?
No. Clarkson is a year early.
Is Clarkson a year early? He's a talented guy.
He sure is. Yeah. Again, though, he's a little bit undersized for a tight head prop at international level.
He's still young, John.
He is young. He is absolutely. He
hasn't finished growing.
Well, we've signed a Samoan prop, and I'm going to give this one go, right? So I have it phonetically written down. Okay, so it's Michael Ala.
You got that part wrong.
Oh, did I? Why?
No, that was a joke, Jason.
Okay, Michael Ala A'a La Toa.
Yeah, it's close.
Okay.
It's not bad.
So anyway, he signed from the Crusaders. I think his brother's an Aussie international and he's a Samoan international.
Yep.
So he signed from the Crusaders. I was looking at the team. There was actually an Irish guy playing for them, Oliver Yeager.
That's right.
Who played your man Mike, I'm going to call him Michael. Michael was on the bench when Jaeger was starting, when they played Wellington a few days ago.
Yeah.
Alato is normally the guy who starts in Jaeger benches, but they switched it around because it was Wellington. It's an interesting signing.
Kane's alone, bud.
He's a good player. I mean, you don't get to play for the Crusaders if you're not. He's of course his father was there the day half his country beat Wales.
Western Samoa in 91.
Yeah.
If only they played the whole of Samoa.
A famous joke in rugby and a famous day. But it's a good signing.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with the signing.
I have a feeling that Leinster got a bit frightened this year. Not frightened. Well, I suppose. I mean, obviously Benty's, you know, whatever. Who I think, by the way, what a great player he has been for us.
Deserved a T-shirt, by the way.
Well, he certainly deserved a T-shirt. The year went. I'll show you after this is over, Jason. I'll show you the design I actually have for him. I haven't done. What was I going to say? Oh yeah. With Porter gone and Furlong gone away with the Irish team, we're left. We would find ourselves, and obviously there's been ongoing injury problems for both, you know, Clarkson and Abdeladze. We would have found ourselves having to dip kind of into, you know, levels below the academy to backfill. So I think they decided to take a jump. Good player became available, so they went for it.
Well, we signed ex-Munster guy to cover. We also signed a guy from Lansdowne to cover during the season.
A lot of short-term guys.
So, you know, we need a guy in that position. And people are linking it to Andrew Porter switching back to Loosehead, which Andy Farrell seems keen on it, to be fair. He's tried it a little bit. So I'm not saying it's not going to happen. But I think...
Well, we saw what happened to Finlay Beelam when they did it against Samoa, you know, like, and I'm sure he never wants to experience that again. And, you know, he kind of, his reputation was, I wouldn't say destroyed, but it's certainly not enhanced by that performance. Well, it doesn't matter what I think, but like, it's what he thinks and what happened to him on the pitch and how his peers think of him or consider him. And I'm sure no one likes to go flying every single scrum.
The thing about Porter is I can't believe why people would be so. I mean, Andrew Porter is a world class tight head prop. He is
one of the reasons why we're so successful, why Leinster is so successful, is that we have two brilliant front rows that can come on and play like for like. And we've done that when we were winning in the early teens and again now.
I'd say he's top five world tight head props, along with Tyke Furlong, funnily enough. He is going to play plenty of rugby. Why would he risk it all to go back to a position where he was, let's be honest, at best mediocre?
I'm not sure I go along with him being...
He was fifth choice, John. That's the reality of it.
Hold on, he was about four the last time he played Loosehead.
He started off in the Leinster Scott and it didn't work out for him. He'd been hopped by Dooley and Byrne. So they decided to see what would happen at tight end. He was miserable as well. Remember, he gave an interview and said he was really, really unhappy. Wasn't enjoying his rugby when he was playing at Loosehead prop. Switched to tight head prop. Found it tough learning, but made it. And now he's a world-class player. Why would you take a world-class player? And I just don't see the reasoning. And it's not because... Okay, Cian Healy's getting on, so you're looking for the guy who's going to replace him. But we have the guys who are going to replace him. Peter Dooley's a really good player. Ed Burns, an Irish international. I don't see the need for it. I just don't see the need for it.
Well, the need for it is people who want to get Furlong and Porter on the field at the same time. That's what it's about. And like you say, Cian Healy's not getting any younger.
If you don't have a strong scrum, John, they'll be on the pitch at the same time, under the post, watching the penalties sail over. Because
you saw that happen in Bath in about 2015, 2016.
There's all 15. Sorts of things happening in the game of rugby, but at the end of the day, if you don't win your set pieces, you aren't winning the game. And the one set piece that generates more penalties than any other is the scrum.
Well, look, you're preaching to the converted here, Meg. I'm not advocating a move back to Loosehead for the guy.
It's entirely unnecessary, and it's based out of some kind of top trumps idea that we get everyone on the pitch at the same time. But you know, everybody can't be on the pitch, and sometimes you actually want to have a guy who's waiting, so the guy who's on the pitch can empty his arse after 60 minutes, and you bring the other guy on.
For sure.
And then you start that guy the next week and bring the other guy on.
That's it. Anyway, boys, I just want to briefly talk about the ladies' international. We obviously had a victory against Wales last weekend, 45-0, which is great to see. And we take on France this week. There's a couple of brilliant performances.
Sterner test.
What's that?
It'll be a sterner test.
Sterner test, yeah. But I mean,
they also lashed Wales out of it by huge points, so yeah.
Yeah, and I know we've kind of gone over. We normally do this for an hour, and it's kind of just gone over it now. But like, I was listening to. There's been obviously a lot of media coverage. You listened to Off the Ball, and they kind of brought up the subject of professionalism. And maybe we'll leave it just touch on it very briefly. But we'll leave it and we'll come back to it, because next week we won't actually have a match to review except the ladies' match, and we have obviously look forward to our Rainbow Cup game against Munster with a bit more time. They're playing France, but like one woman who stood out head and shoulders was Bevan Parsons. Like her, I don't know, like, you know, she's just a very impressive athlete, and she's still fairly young. Like she, I think she was playing for Ireland when she was 16, so I mean 19 now, I think.
I think there's an interesting conversation to be had around the women's team, because I think they've reached a point. I mean, they've recovered from the, you know, kind of disaster of 2017 in a relatively short period of time. Four years is quite a short period of time to recycle the whole thing. A lot of significant players, great players, retired around, you know, 2017, 2018. So a whole new team had to come in, new coaching. Griggs has done a great job. I think he's done an absolutely great job with them. They're at a point now where they're clearly quite a considerable bit better than Italy, Wales, and Scotland. The problem is that obviously England and New Zealand have sailed off into the distance, and France look to be joining them on the ship of professionalism. Because, you know, at the end of the day, the French players, when they finish playing in Dublin or in Donnybrook, go home, and then the next day they'll do a video session, they'll do a warm down, and then the next day they'll do whatever professional football or professional rugby players do. The next day, Jungang will be working in a hospital, in an ICU. You know, Claire Malloy will be working in a hospital. They'll all be doing their jobs because they're amateurs. And it's really, really hard to maintain a professional level of performance when you're not a professional.
Aren't in place, Dave.
No, that's what I'm saying. Structures aren't in place. Yeah. What I'm saying is this particular team is finding itself in a middle ground where they're considerably better than the other teams in the Six Nations, but are going to struggle to reach the level that France and England are. Now, I actually think that this is a talented team that could cause France a considerable number of problems, and I wouldn't be entirely surprised if Ireland won, because it is an exceptional team with some exceptional young talent in it. And they have one thing that a lot of Irish teams and women's teams in the past haven't had. They have absolute pace in the back three, blinding pace in the back three.
Yeah, well, we'll see how they get on Saturday when they take on France. Just one thing before we go, I see that for the Rainbow Cup, they're after bringing in three new laws. One is that there's red card. When there's someone who's red carded, you can bring on a replacement after 20 minutes. The captain's also going to have a couple of challenges. And for balls that are held up over the line, it's going to be a dropout from under the sticks, the rugby league-like. So it'd be interesting to see
how about two, do like three.
Yeah, well, we'll see how they work out when they're in practice.
Press for time, so it's coming up quite quickly. John, what do you think?
What do I think about
the three changes, the law variations?
It's kind of a bit American football, isn't it? You know, challenges from the like timeouts they have in American football.
How many they get to throw flag?
Yeah. And the bringing on somebody after, I actually think the red card thing is good, because a red card is a very.
Does that remind you of anything that you heard of in the past, John?
Go on.
My black card plus patent pending.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, sorry, Dave. Yeah, well, you robbed that from GAA anyway. So.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, well, they're amateurs. They're never going to notice. And they don't watch the Oval Ball game. A real Gael wouldn't be watching that.
I just think that it's a good thing because what often happens is that the teams that benefit from a red card, remember when Dave Carney got lashed out by your man in Wasps in the first 5 minutes and Carney was gone? He had a yellow card and Carney was gone for the whole game.
Ashley Johnson, the South African.
He played hooker and flanker at the same time sometimes. So you've got anomalies like that, and then you've got ones where a team is harshly penalised because it's a red card. You know, you've seen it quite a lot of it recently where we look at it and we go, oh, wouldn't it be my day? Oh, all that stuff. And you get all the fellas who say, oh, game's gone soft, didn't it? Game's gone soft, oh. So a team has lost a game because there's a red card. The game is killed as a spectacle because there's a red card. I just think that the player can still get cited. He can still miss 3, 4, 10, whatever weeks. But the team isn't being penalised as much because they can bring another player on after 20 minutes. They can't bring the same player on. They've got to use one of their bench. I think it's actually well worth a shot. If it doesn't work out, so what? But I think it's well worth a look.
I think the interesting thing is what you say, John, about bringing a guy on in off the bench, because that reduces your tactical options later on in the game.
Yeah. But it's not as bad as having 14 players for the whole game.
Because there's been a lot of, I like what we have done in trying to, I think it'd be better, I think they'd be better using laws, but, you know, they've been using cards to try and fix the problem of high tackles. And as a result of which we've seen a lot of what we would consider orange cards, if you know what I mean. They're not quite reds, but they're not yellows either. And this kind of, most red cards in games are for those orange situations. So I don't think it's actually going to, I think it's fine.
Yeah, I'm impressed with it.
At the same time, I do think that there should be a more severe punishment for, you know, blackguardry, where, you know, there has to be some kind of significant punishment. I mean, it is a team sport, so a team should be punished. You know, teams, you know, so we'll see how it goes. I'm prepared to give it a go. I the captain's challenge thing means nothing to me, and I like the idea of the dropout.
Yeah, I just think it sounds a bit American football. Yeah. It's interesting. We'll see how it goes.
I will change my opinion if they bring in a little flag.
Okay. Very good, lads. Thanks very much. Thanks very much for watching. If you are following us on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, please give us a like, thumbs up, and subscription.
Smash that like button, mate.
Smash that like button.
So, thanks again. Cheers.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.